Good morning. I'm Marty Derlin with the KVNF News for Wednesday, July 14, 2013. According to the Denver Post, oil and gas companies that violate rules in Colorado are increasingly being penalized with public service rather than formal penalties. The Post reports that the state currently has only 15 inspectors on staff to monitor more than 51,000 wells, in addition to cleanup operations at closed wells. Meanwhile, oil and gas spills are happening at a rate of one per day, with nearly 2,500 spills reported in the state since 2008. But, according to the Post, many spills aren't being treated as formal violations of state rules. In lieu of imposing formalized penalties, the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission sometimes gives industry rule breakers the alternative of performing a public project. As part of that deal, the companies don't have to admit fault. Colorado commissioners have authorized 16 of these so-called consent deals this year, up from 9 in 2012. Some of these deals, however, can actually wind up costing companies more than formal penalties. In one recent consent agreement for PDC Energy, the company agreed to a $35,000 consent penalty for a spill north of Windsor. The maximum state penalty for that same spill would have been $9,000. Supporters of the agreement have said that rather than funneling penalty money back to the state, these consent deals give direct benefits back to local communities affected by oil and gas industry accidents. The release of Gasland 2, the controversial anti-fracking documentary film from Josh Fox, has reignited controversy in the debate over natural gas industry practices. Some claim the film's facts are distorted or, at the very least, embellished, while others claim the same of the Gasland rebuttal documentary, Frack Nation. Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher has more.
My name is Josh Fox. It's been 5 years since the first proposal to drill thousands of gas wells came knocking at my door.
So begins the sequel to the hugely popular yet equally controversial 2010 documentary Gasland by filmmaker Josh Fox. The first film was a damning indictment of the oil and gas industry, in particular, the drilling procedure known as fracking. If you've ever heard about water faucets that light up from seeping gas, chances are the reference is to a famous or infamous scene in the film.
Whoa, Jesus Christ.
That film was nominated for an Academy Award. Gasland 2 is carried by HBO and continues a conversation with families who believe errant water contamination in their homes comes from nearby oil and gas drilling. Yes, there is more footage of water faucets, and this time even garden hoses, catching on fire. In Gasland 2, Fox covers new ground, literally, this time going as far away as Australia. Fox says the point of Gasland 2 is to understand how the U.S. government is responding to what he calls a drilling and humanitarian crisis.
And what we wanted to investigate was what was the reaction going to be. And what we found was that at every level of government, whether it was state or local or federal, the oil and gas industry had more influence on the policies than the people did.
Gasland 2 doesn't return to Colorado, but like the first film, it puts forward a lengthy argument against oil and gas developers without much included from their perspective. It was that cut-and-dried approach to the first Gasland that infuriated the industry, producing lengthy rebuttals. Fox got it wrong, some say. Others accuse him of playing fast and loose with the facts. Generally, the defense is that the health risks posed to the communities by drilling and fracking is overblown through Fox's lens. The same criticisms are already being leveled against Gasland 2, like this parody, posing as a trailer for the film.
Hurry to theaters this season for the same terrifyingly wrong fearumentaries, where the only thing you'll learn about natural gas drilling is how to fracture the truth.
David Ludlum is executive director of the trade group West Slope Colorado Oil and Gas Association. He admits the industry could get better at responding to concerns about health problems from drilling and fracking. Still, he worries that films like Gasland polarize the conversation.
It sets up sort of a binary false choice for the American public about either being for or against a technology. It's much more complex than that. You know, we should be talking about how can we always improve technologies, work collaboratively to reduce their impacts.
Gasland director Josh Fox believes the industry is doing everything it can to change the conversation rather than address health and safety problems. But perhaps above all the other critics, a kind of counter-documentary called Frack Nation rankles Mr. Fox the most. It was released earlier this year by an Irish filmmaker who also challenged Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth. Questions we posed about Frack Nation led to a contentious exchange with Mr. Fox. Aspen Public Radio has posted the entire interview on our website. With heat on both sides of the Gasland documentaries, questions remain about who's telling the truth. Reporter Mike Sorahan is with Energy Wire, a new service that covers energy and the environment. He reviewed the first Gasland. He compared statements in the film to documented facts to determine how accurate it was, and speaking to us on a bad phone line, says both sides have mangled some facts.
Josh Fox overstated some things and made some errors, and those who were criticizing him also made some errors of their own.
For example, says Sorahan, the film wrongly states that oil and gas developers are completely exempt from major federal environmental regulations. One of those exemptions is often called the Halliburton loophole.
Drilling is not exempt from the Safe Drinking Water Act. And if you compare with a little bit of Washington technical speak, it's exempt from the underground injection control permitting aspects of the Safe Drinking Water Act. If an oil and gas company poisons drinking water, they can still be punished under the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Sorahan says he found other statements in the film that aren't entirely accurate, including the number of chemicals used when fracking. For his part, Josh Fox stands behind the accuracy of his films. The debate over them may intensify with the release of Gasland 2, and for now, viewers will be left to draw their own conclusions. For Aspen Public Radio News, I'm Elise Thatcher.
The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that Mesa County Commissioners on Monday announced that recreational marijuana sales will be banned in the county's unincorporated areas. The ban includes any facilities that cultivate, manufacture, test, or package marijuana products. Commissioner Rose Pugliese said she supports the decision mainly because marijuana is still illegal under federal law, while fellow Commissioner Steve Acquafresca said his support comes from his fear that young people will be more susceptible to abusing the drug if it's legally available. One resident at the meeting claimed marijuana was a, quote, social evil, while another said the often impure nature of black market marijuana should persuade the county to allow local regulated production. Education News Colorado reports that most Colorado school districts will use the state's model system for evaluating teachers and principals this year, the first year that schools have to perform the new state-mandated evaluations. Larger districts such as Denver and Douglas County have reportedly chosen to use their own evaluation systems, but 160 of the 178 districts across the state will be using the model system. The state's plan calls for a year-long evaluation process, which includes an annual orientation, review of goals and performance, educator self-assessment, and end-of-year review, among other criteria. Under Senate Bill 191, approved in 2010, all principals and teachers across the state must be evaluated yearly and will be scored on a scale ranging from highly effective to ineffective. This year will be a practice year under the new law. Effective ratings will be counted, while ineffective ratings won't count until next year. And finally, the Paonia Town Council last night walked back its fix the sidewalk or else approach after hearing from residents upset about a letter requiring sidewalk repair based on a decades-old ordinance that has never been enforced. Residents who failed to comply would have been faced with a $1,000 fine, which could have taken the form of a lien on their home if they failed to pay. Here's more. Peonia citizens waited through 11 agenda items and several reports before the opportunity to talk about sidewalks finally arrived. By then, one 37-year resident of the town had a bit of pent-up anger.
I take care of my sidewalks. I take care of my mother's sidewalks. But when she gets a letter that she doesn't understand, threatening her with a $1,000 fine for a few weeds growing on her sidewalk, you need to go about this a different way. I mean, talk to the homeowners. Don't send them a letter. Explain it to them.
Loretha Rolfe received an ovation after her speech to the council.
We're not pedestrian friendly on our sidewalks, but what about our streets? We've got potholes that will swallow a smart car right now. So why are we sending letters to tell us to fix the sidewalks? You get a $1,000 fine, which leads to a lien, which takes somebody's property. And I'm the administrator at Peonia Care Rehab Center. And I also work for the veterans of this community and their families. And they're all elderly. They do not have the money to fix sidewalks in front of their street. They do not. So you're going to take their houses from them? Because you're going to say, okay, we're going to put a tax lien on them? That is not acceptable in my mind and in my town. It's not okay.
Diane Sylvain also spoke.
The town I know can't afford to plow my street, you know. I try to get out there or get help to shovel my own walk, and that's hard enough. I understand that, you know, we don't have a lot of money and it takes a while to fix the street. Well, I guess I would like that kind of consideration about fixing the sidewalk.
If some council members were on the defensive, it's because they asked voters in 2011 to approve a $3 per month surcharge to the water and trash fee to finance sidewalk repair, and even that small amount was rejected by voters. But in the end, the council decided to hold their letter in abeyance and take more time to find a solution to one of Peonia's bumpy problems. As part of that process, they'll take another look at 2007's sidewalk report. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
Thanks for listening.